On this computer.
Okay.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Broken Oars podcast. And today we have with us, and we're going to ask Lucy to introduce herself in just a second, but we have Lucy Denyer, who is a freelance journalist who recently wrote an article for Telegraph about returning to rowing after a break for career and motherhood and family and like all those important things, and has come back to rowing in York. But before we dive in, I am going to make my standard little appeal that if you like the podcast and if you want to support us, you can go to our Buy Me a Coffee website, which is linked below this podcast on your favorite podcasting app. And you can sort of buy us a virtual coffee and we'll help sort of pay for our Zoom account and keep the lights on with Podbean. So if you choose to do that, thank you very much. Otherwise, please enjoy. Lucy, welcome
Hello.
to the Broken Oars podcast. Essentially, you've started rowing again, and you wrote about it, which caused something of a stir on rowing Twitter.
Which is very exciting. I'm a rowing influencer, maybe.
You are, you literally are now. It seems like you've kind of literally been a journalist, an actual honest to God print journalist who said something really nice about rowing. It
Yes, come on.
was absolutely fantastic. You know, the entire rowing world was just like, look, have you seen this?
I've missed out on this reaction. I need to go and find it.
Oh yeah, no, we loved it. We absolutely loved it. So, Lucy, could you sort of like maybe tell us a little bit about yourself and sort of how you've got to being sort of after a bit of a break, coming back to rowing for York Rowing Club?
Yes. So I started rowing 20 odd years ago at university in Newcastle. And I started rowing because everyone said, "You're tall, you should row." And my dad had rowed at university and he was still a sort of mad keen Henley attender, etc. So I thought, I'll give it a go. And so I spent actually only 2 years. I didn't row my third year because I went to America for an exchange program. But I spent 2 years rowing on the very freezing cold Tyne.
Okay, sorry, can I just hang on, dive in there a second. Where did you go in America?
I went to Illinois, which is not known for its rowing.
No, no.
Newcastle had an exchange program with the University of Illinois, so I went and
Yes, you
did a
did.
semester there. So when I came back, I'd missed kind of head racing season, so I just decided to take the last 2 terms off. And actually, it was really nice not having to get up at 5 o'clock on a Saturday morning.
Very wise to miss head racing season, yes. I row at I currently row at Tyne United, so I know the freezing Tyne very well. I can't imagine why you'd want to exchange such a glorious, placid, wonderful, balmy river for the wilds of Illinois. It's completely beyond me.
I mean, yeah. The Tyne is not a warm river to row on, and it's tidal, which means, wellies and climbing down depths, and oh no, it was quite exhausting. Anyway, so I did that, but I really enjoyed rowing, and it was kind of painful and pleasurable simultaneously. I made some really good friends. My sort of best friend from university still is, I met her when we were on rowing training camp, basically complaining, eating chocolate in bed. And so I'm really glad I had that experience of rowing. And then I spent the intervening years, I lived in America again for a little bit, where again, I was in the middle of the country in Kansas, so I did not row there. And then moved back to London and actually moved to Putney and spent kind of 12 years thinking, I'm in Putney, I really need to row. But was also sort of having children and working really hard and juggling 2 jobs and all of that. And there just never really seemed to be the time. And then we moved up to York last summer. I grew up here. We actually didn't move up because of me. We moved up because of my husband's job. But so I knew the rowing club here and had various friends who'd been affiliated with it in the past. And I thought, right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to start rowing again. So I got in touch and they welcomed me in, and here I am back on the river.
Was it very much like riding a bike? Did you just get back in a boat and every, you know, the catch and the finish were exactly where you'd left them all of those years ago?
Yeah, it kind of was. It kind of was. I think the thing that I struggled with at first was remembering all the kind of turns. So I knew, my body knew what to do once I was in the boat, but it was sort of remembering all the technicalities. And I felt really, I was like, just don't say anything, just copy the next person. But yeah, I think I'm back in the zone now.
I know this is a rowing podcast and we should be talking about rowing and sort of like, you know, what it's like to row at York and everything like that. But I just wanted to like go back, and it's like you appear to have had an absolutely fascinating life. So you like hopped over to the University of Illinois in your third year at university, and then you were out in Kansas.
Yeah.
What were you doing?
It's quite niche. Again, it's related to my husband's job. He got a posting out there for 2 years.
Okay.
And it's quite a random place. It's not, you know, it's not where everyone goes when they move to America, but that's why it's different and interesting. But I did get to the point where I was like, I really need to spend some time other than just the Midwest.
Okay.
America. So yeah, which I've actually did.
And that whole time, have you been kind of like writing for a living or just?
Yes. Well, writing and editing. So I did a postgrad in journalism. I then at Cardiff, didn't row at Cardiff. Was too busy having fun, really. Then I moved to London and worked for a couple of magazines, and then I freelanced for a bit, and then I worked for the Sunday Times, and then I worked for the Telegraph for 8.5 years, but as an editor, not really writing.
Okay.
And now I'm back to writing again. So yeah, so, always journalism.
Was it your first degree, or was it something you moved into because if you were traveling and moving, it's kind of something you can pack up and as you were moving around, you could take your profession with you, sort of thing?
No, my first degree was in English, and then I did the, and then actually it was Illinois. That was what, when I did my stint there, my exchange, they had a big journalism program, and they had a really big student newspaper, had sort of 20,000 readership. So I did some writing for that, and I took some journalism classes and thought, oh, actually, this is really good. And I'd always sort of considered journalism as an option. So then I went off and did my postgrad, and then got my... And you know, at that point, I didn't think I'd be moving around the world a lot at all.
Right.
So I just... that was how I got into it. But yeah, but it does have also the bonus of the fact that... So I had to leave my in-office editing job when we moved, but I was able to then... freelance, so yeah, it is quite portable in that respect.
Yeah. Lewin, are you about
to go for it?
We had a chat with Mark Davis from British Rowing a little while ago, and we stay in touch. And essentially, rowing in Britain, we lose about 10,000 people a year from the numbers, which are gently dipping, as Lewin will no doubt tell you. We lose about 10,000 people a year from the sport, but we kind of gain them back from people who start rowing at university, maybe keep it on for a couple of years after they've left university. But he says there tends to be a dip. So you have that early 20s cohort just before life starts to get really busy with career and marriage and children and all of the things that make up a life. And then you might see people's dropping out of the sport and then coming back into the sport as they get into kind of master's category, maybe as the children get a bit older and the weekends aren't perhaps quite as full. So the master's category tends to pick back up. Having been active at Newcastle and having found rowing, did you then stay active in between leaving the sport and coming back to it? And I'm kind of asking because there's a bit of a crisis. Crisis is maybe a strong word, but young girls tend to disengage with sport there's a bit of a trend towards it. So I'm just wondering if you, having found something that you enjoy, despite it being the north and freezing cold, even in August, did you stay active before?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I've always been quite an active person through school. And I'd say rowing's the only kind of consistent team sport I've done. And it's quite an unusual team sport in that you're sort of an individual within a team. When I did my postgrad, I did lots of running. I ran a marathon. And then when I first moved to London, I carried on running. And then all through that whole period for the last kind of the intervening gap, it's mostly been about me kind of keeping fit as opposed to being part of a thing. So,
right.
You know, going to the gym, lots of running, cycling, swimming, all that kind of stuff, because I like to move and I think it's really important. I would say my activity levels have remained high. But in terms of the kind of team commitment, I think that's what gets tricky when, as you say, you're juggling all that life stuff, because you do need to show up, or else, you know, it can't happen if not everyone's there. So I think that's the challenge. But I definitely have remained, and obviously I had three babies, so had to sort of, you know, burn all that off after I'd had them, and then I had to run around and keep after them. I've got three sons, they're pretty active, but, you know, lots of kind of doing, you know, and wanting to sort of demonstrate that it's important to stay healthy, but also them just having a lot of energy. So, yeah.
Fair enough. Again, I'm kind of struck by just how much you've achieved in your life. It's just, it's really very impressive. It's like, it's three children, not just the standard two. And so you've been a senior editor at The Telegraph. You've been a rower, a runner, raised three boys, and...
Not quite, raising, still raising.
Yeah. I mean, do you have sort of a particular kind of like, I don't know, are you thinking of writing like a self-improvement book for everybody? It's like, this is how you become an incredibly successful journalist and a sportswoman and like raise a family. It seems like you've got yourself a lot more than most people.
I think I always joke that I'm still like a sort of school girl. Like, I've never really lost the kind of extracurricular drive. So I sing in a choir as well. And
really?
And when I was in London, I wasn't rowing, but I was painting. That was the other thing I did. So I think that I'm married to someone who has a job that takes them away quite a lot. And so I've always kept myself busy. And so I think that it's been a bit of a like sanity saver for me. And I know that lots of people are like, you're insane, why are you doing all this stuff? But it is, and also because we have moved, because he hasn't been around for some of the time, and because we've moved within that as well, it's a way of meeting people and creating community, and certainly coming up here to start to row and meet people. And, you know, we had a big dinner in January and racing again this weekend, and, you know, and then people go, oh, should we go for a walk on Friday? And it's a really good way to meet people and kind of get to know a place. And so I think it's that as much as anything else. But I'm possibly not very good at relaxing.
Okay, fair enough. This idea that you've always kind of had like a burning, like, I'm going to be doing something. I'm going to be doing something. It's the weekend. What am I going to be doing? I have always felt that rowing is kind of like the natural home for those kind of people. That the people you tend to find in rowing, they've either come from being slightly hyperactive school kids who are just like in private schools, who just like were plonked in a boat and say pull very hard on that, and they found it calmed down a bit, and they just kept with it. But adult joiners, they tend to have their own, or no, I don't know if they tend to, but some of them have their own long sporting histories. So I have played every unprofitable minority sport under the sun that I can think of. You know, it's, there's been squash, there's been basketball, there's been, you know, climbing, that was another one. Anything that I could do and injure myself without making any money out of it, I've probably done. Do you see rowing as a natural home for people like that, or is it a bit broader, as my current club president would say?
Can you still hear me? Sorry.
Yes.
This is a bit you'll have to edit the car system to shut down.
Okay.
I think there's, I notice correlation with certain sports. I think there's a, particularly with sort of, without being very generalistic, older men, cycling and rowing. So the Masters men at York tend to row on a Sunday, but they all go for a bike ride together on a Saturday. I think there's quite a skiing correlation. It's like, oh, if I can't be in on the water, I'll be sort of on the ice.
Yep.
Maybe. Running a bit, maybe less so. It's a bit more straining on the old joint. I went for a run on Sunday and I'm still quite stiff today. But I think there's that thing. And also it's the sort of being outside thing. I always like to be outside,
yeah,
even when it's thing. But not kind of, I mean, I don't know. And then I suppose it's to a certain, you said minority sports. I think it slightly kind of edges out more majority sports. Like, I'm really just like doing COD psychology here. Like football or rugby or whatever, because they are sports that also require lots of team participation. So you kind of don't really have time to do both. But there's time to do a bit of a like a niche on the side.
Yeah.
So, and also I think willingness to give stuff a go. We went to Sweden on holiday a few years ago and I did cross country.
I loved it. And then I was like, oh, I really want to get into this, but obviously quite niche. But I think it's that like, oh, this is a bit random, I'll try it. I think that's quite a rowing mentality as well, maybe.
There's also, I think, so you can, let's say you play football at school and, for example, or something like that, and you leave school and you still go out on Wednesday night to the local five-a-side pitches and you have a kick around with your friends and it becomes a fairly regular social thing and you carry on doing it for a period. You tend not to think of yourself as a footballer, but if you are a rower, there's something about rowing that it becomes very, very close, not very close. It almost becomes an identity that you take on. So that you wouldn't ever introduce yourself because you play football on a Wednesday night and go, hi, I'm Aaron, I'm a footballer. But I might say, hi, I'm Aaron, I'm a rower, because we come to very closely identify with the sport. Did you find when you did it, you were identifying as a rower? And I'm using identify in a non-pejorative and not in the loaded sense it's come to take on in the present culture. But it becomes very aligned to what we are. And did you find when you came back to it, it's like, well, I've come back to a part of myself now. There is a very close correlation, I think, between people who row and how they describe themselves as being rowers.
Absolutely, completely. I mean, I mentioned my dad earlier. So he rowed at, he was at Guy's Medical School and rowed there, I think, fairly briefly. And yet, you know, has his Guy's blazer, goes to Henley every single year, inevitably sees people he knows. I mean, British rowing is relatively small and it's quite sort of, not incestuous is perhaps not the word, perhaps it is, but you know, you tend to know people and, you know, you leave one club and you join another. And, you know, I've got friends who kind of rowed at Newcastle and now row wherever they're living now. And there is this sort of the annual sort of Henley thing where you've got a sort of place to gather. And so, and even things like the blazer and stuff, there's quite an identity. And I think, unlike, say, football, where it is very professional and professionalised and obviously huge, huge in terms of sort of Premier League, rowing, like, there's this almost like a, there's a, basically a genuine chance if you row for your club, you could end up rowing at Henley, which is the sort of, if you put the Olympics aside, that's the sort of, that's the thing. Unlike if you're a five-a-side footballer, you're probably never going to go and play for Arsenal. But, you know, you might not win and you might not even make it through the trials, but you could go there and do it. And so I think it becomes, I think that all ties into the identity thing. And I think there is a kind of, I know it's an international sport, but in Britain it does feel kind of peculiarly British, maybe American too. I watched The Boys in the Boat the other day, which obviously is the other side. But yeah, I think there's that sort of, I think that all ties into it. But yes, and I did, I'd say I did identify as a rower at university, partly because obviously that was why you never went out on a Friday night, because you had to get up at 5 o'clock on a Saturday. And the same now, and actually it's lovely. It's a lovely thing to be able to do again, to identify as, having not really felt like I had that name. No, I was just saying in the intervening years, I didn't feel qualified to introduce myself.
What did you think of The Boys in the Boat?
I enjoyed it. I think there was a lot of kind of slightly negative reviews and, I think it's, so a lot of the reviews I'd read were sort of, oh gosh, you know, this is trying to portray what is essentially an elite sport as kind of the underdog fighting. And I haven't read the book. I'm not au fait with the history, so I can't comment on that. But it's not as good as True Blue, is it? But, you know, as rowing films go, if you're getting into a sort of categorization,
I still vote for the social network, but there you go.
Have you actually seen it yet, Lewin? Have you been to see Boys?
No, I haven't. I haven't. I live a very, very sheltered existence in the middle of the countryside, literally a dozen miles away from the nearest cinema. So when it comes out on Amazon or Netflix, we'll watch it, but we're probably not going to splash for a babysitter. Just to go to the cinema. Sorry?
I took my middle son to watch it, and he really enjoyed
Starting them young, I like it.
Yeah, I'm already working on my eldest, who is nearly 13, and he's sort of tall and gangly, and has realised he's never going to be a pro footballer. Started to not like rugby because he's tall and gangly. Some of the boys are massive. So I'm like, go, start rowing. Your next
start rowing.
Row.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to be good. You'll be a good rower.
York has a good junior program as well. And it's one of, okay. It was something I was going to circle back towards, but we found during the pandemic when we were talking to other rowers that as well as the, you know, the Boys in the Boat is very sports movie. I counted at least 4 montages and 3 dawning moments of realization of, oh my God, they're going to do it, the plucky underdog. So you could kind of count the cliches a bit, but it got close to an essential truth about why people row, which is a lot of us don't really know why we row. We just know that we feel better when we do it. There's almost like some kind of connection between us and the water, or us and making the boat move well in coordination with a group of other people. And we found during the pandemic when we were talking to people that a lot of the reasons why people row, there's the sporting aspect, there's the competitive aspect, there's the physical exercise aspect, but there's also the sense of community. There's the sense of, it's actually technically very, very difficult. When you see it at the Olympics, if you watch someone like Andy Hodge going down the track in 2012, which is technically flawless rowing, people go, well, it doesn't look that hard. They're just kind of, the boat's almost like it's on rails, and they don't understand that you have to make it look like that and move like that. And it's really difficult. And then you've got to do it with 4 other people. And one of them's out of sync on the slide and is piling into your kidneys. And that's usually me, but never mind. When you tick all of those boxes about community, learning a new skill, being outside, fresh air, exercise, these are all of the things that we now tick in modern society as being essential for good mental health. So it's really like, it's the equivalent of an SSRI in boat form, really.
Yeah, I agree. I think all that stuff about the fact that it's so goofy and it is a challenge, but it's also a sort of quite satisfying challenge to overcome. And that thing about being a sort of individual within a team, you know, you can row as well as you can row, and that is going to make a difference, but you've got to row in time with everyone else. But you don't have to pass a ball to them or anything. You literally just have to do what they are doing. And that is, there's something, I love that. You know, you can be rowing and having completely your own thoughts and kind of getting inside your own head, but you're also doing it three or seven other people.
And it sounds incredibly simple until you try and do it, because everything has to be coordinated from the catch to the finish and back again. It's a real challenge to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that I sort of forgotten that. I'm doing more sculling now and rowing in a quad, which I hadn't really done before. And that is a whole different ball game of coordination. You've got two arms going two different directions. So, yeah.
Are you enjoying it? Are you enjoying the change? Have you been out in a single yet?
So I went in a single when I first joined the club, and I went down. I was a sub one Saturday and they didn't need me. And so I was going to go for a run, and the club chairman said, "Why don't you take a skull out?" He said, "You've skulled before, haven't you?" And I said, "Well, I have, but only a couple of times." He said, "You'll be fine." He shoved in skull. And literally, the moment he'd done it, I could see his face going, "Oh, actually, that was a terrible idea." And sure enough, I think I took about three strokes and tipped straight in the river. Luckily, it was September, so it wasn't too cold. I had not bought any spare clothes. I had to borrow spare clothes from the men who'd all seen me fall in. It was a bit of a baptism of fire. So I have not been out in a single since, or even with one other person. I have only been in a quad, which is probably right now the safest place for me.
It's got to be said, it's a certain badge of pride that I have capsized in every single river I've ever rowed on.
I think it's important to have done that.
Yeah.
It's a rite of passage. It's a rite of
passage. I haven't capsized on the Tyne, possibly because they never let me out in a skull.
Yeah, so no, I have capsized on the Tyne, even in August. It's absolutely freezing. Everything goes back inside, including the will to live. But we talked to Jack Beaumont, the Olympian, lovely chap, very much a club man, very, very positive about rowing. And his take on it as a single sculler and someone who won the silver in the quad at Tokyo was, if you don't fall in, you're obviously not trying hard enough. And we didn't like to tell him that when we fell in, it was usually due to a lack of skill.
Well, but then also your enthusiasm and your trying. I did voluntarily jump into the Tyne once, but I can also confirm that it is quite cold. But yeah.
Have they asked you to steer the quad yet?
No.
Okay.
But I did go out. I know. I said I didn't go out as one other person, but I did. I went out in a double with a beginner. So we were rowing a very flat-bottomed boat, which was difficult, okay. And I did have to steer, but it was not particularly successful, I would say. Also, the ooze is not very wide, so
no, it's, and it can be a little bit twisty as well.
Yeah.
We've rowed at York because we've done Springhead and Yorkhead and stuff at Agecroft, and we know Hypatia down at York. I don't know if that's her real name, but that's her Twitter handle, and she occasionally, you know, points out our factual inaccuracies about if we ever get into the areas of classicism on our podcast, which doesn't happen very often. Okay. How are you finding rowing at York? Because at the minute, this year has been, we've had to cancel loads of stuff on the Tyne because of floodwaters and things like that. But York is one of those rivers that seems to flood almost when there's a light shower. Yeah.
I mean, it is raining at the moment and we are supposed to be racing on today, and everyone's going, is it going to happen? We're supposed to be racing, well, head of the Trent on Sunday, which got cancelled. Obviously, that's not York. But yes, I have not actually been on the river since Small Boat's Head, which was rearranged to January from the end of last year because of the flooding. Because there's been so much flooding, it's been impossible to get on water. Because it's not tidal, and it gets to a certain level, and then it sort of, the water just goes on top and it just comes up. And our boathouse even flooded after Christmas because it's right on the water that it came up. So then we had a big clear out operation. So it's not optimal for that, I would say.
Is yours the boathouse by the bridge with the steps going down to the water?
It is. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where we boated from. It's a lovely spot when the river's where it's supposed to be, but I imagine it's. The river has to rise quite a bit to get up those steps, so that's quite significant flooding.
Yeah, it doesn't usually get all the way to the top, but even even if it, I can't remember what the, I think, and this is probably a bit to edit out, I don't, I think York has a sort of a minimum, or, it can flood a certain amount and we'll still row. Yeah. And I think it's quite punchy because it floods so much. But obviously it also speeds up, and there's all sorts of little eddies, and it being so narrow, and then you get lots of flotsam because you've got the trees along the bank, and, you know, so it can get a bit dodgy.
Isn't there on the bridge, basically, it's been a very long time since I've been anywhere near the River in York, but isn't there kind of a kind of flood water gauge?
Yeah.
But it noticeably goes up much higher than all of the surrounding buildings.
I'm not sure. I don't know. But there is a stretch along, like, that bit of the river, sort of from particularly about sort of Scarborough Bridge, which is the next bridge along, through to Roundtree Park End. Like, there's a pub there that always floods. Definitely don't want to buy a house in certain streets down there. And I think, you know, and then I think it's a bit calm. There's a park that's been shut since the end of last year because it's just flooded, basically just been underwater for like 3 months. So, yeah. But there has also been, obviously, a lot of rain this winter.
It's been a very wet winter everywhere, I think.
The country is a bit soggy. As someone who straddled both journalism and rowing, does that make you a sort of fairly rare individual? Because from the point of view, I think, of rowers, I'd say don't really get a fair shout from journalism in general. Is there a particular reason for this? If you look at, let's say, rowing and hockey, they're basically team sports. They're, you know, disproportionately populated by people who've been to a certain type of school. But you never, the kind of, the intensity of demand for justification of existence never really goes in hockey's direction. I mean, is there kind of like a thing, rowing's a good one, we can have a go at them, that this will make some good column inches?
So I'm not a sports journalist, so I confess I don't, unless it's sort of the Olympics or around, you know, the boat race, I tend to not, that's sort of when I clock into sort of reading about rowing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it does possibly unfairly have that sort of, it's just full of posh ex-public school boys and girls, and it's an elite sport, and you can only do it if you've got a certain amount of money, blah, blah, blah. And sure, like, it's not, you know, boats cost money, and insurance and all the rest of it. It's not like football where what you need is a ball. And it does tend to happen in public schools. I think that is why York is great, because it has a really good youth program. So any of the schools in York, and we've sent some young people to the Olympics from the state schools around here. So, you know, that is brilliant. But I think that probably does have, I don't know if there's some sort of like weird mental kind of post-colonial history. It's not even that kind of a sport, but I don't know why, but I think there is that sort of, there is that towards it. But I can't tell you why that is. I think it's a shame.
It is. I mean, Lewin and I'm from Northumbria, and Lewin is from the south, so he is my natural overlord historically, and he likes to remind me of this. But I think there's something of a lingering historical aftertaste with regards to rowing, because taking British cycling out of the equation, which has had its fair share of scandals and troubles, it's Britain's most successful Olympic sport. Its most successful Olympian is fundamentally working class. He's a carpenter's son from Marlow. But we tend to see it through the prism of Henley, and we tend to see it through the prism of, especially in the 19th century, a lot of the public schools that people sent the middle classes and above to were on the Thames and had historically rowed, and they tended to filter into the two main universities being Oxford and Cambridge and or Durham, which meant that there was the boat race and then there was Henley again. So it became very associated with a certain type of person. But if you kind of scratch the surface historically, it was actually a working class sport originally, coming from kind of the King's Watermen in the time of Henry VIII. We don't have to go back that far, but even relatively recently, a lot of the innovations in rowing, like the fine shell and the outboard rigger and the sliding seats, were invented by a Geordie called Harry Clasper. But if you just look a little bit further than the Henley and the Blazers, and it's fun, it's the circuses in town and we're all going to dress up, and it's fantastic if you race there, it's fantastic if you just go there for the social thing. If you look at what clubs like York or Tyne United or Agecrofts or, you know, or the Iron Bridges of this world who you know, have just been in touch with us about a boat that's been damaged, the junior programs and the good that's done and the way that they spread out into the local community and connect with state schools and get children who might not traditionally be seen as rowers into the sport. And we've already talked about what the sport can do. We have to kind of leave that, I think, now, don't we? And we have to look at it as being actually an incredibly inclusive sport and an incredibly good one to get into.
And also, what I love and I see at York is it's cross-generational, because you've got
masters volunteering to coach juniors, and they in turn are getting to know people older than them. There's, you know, people to kind of look up to and aspire to and want to get to that stage, and the juniors are valued in, you know, they're not seen as kind of, oh, well, you're only a junior. It's like, great, you're a really good rower, let's invest in you and let's push you towards this. And so I think that's quite unique, really, because you have sort of respect for the masters who've been rowing. You know, we've got people in their 80s still rowing, like, amazing. They're not kind of just sort of farmed off as kind of, oh, well, past it. So there's sort of respect upwards, but respect downwards as well. So I think that's really unique, actually. I mean, I don't have extensive experience of other sports, but I do think that's really special about rowing. So yeah, I agree. I think we need to sort of try and ditch the, but I also don't think that means throwing the baby out with the bathwater. It doesn't mean like, oh, let's can Henley because it's really posh and everyone wears a blazer. It's like, well, no, that's part of its heritage and it's great, but it doesn't mean that you can only do it if you, you know, taught at the pulmonary mouth and went to public school.
Yeah. Well, anyone can go to Henley.
Anyone can buy a blazer.
Yeah. You know, anyone can rock up and do, you know, it's, you know, yeah. and people do. It might take you a little bit longer to get into stewards, but anyone can buy an enclosures ticket and go and watch the racing and, you know, and do. And especially when the weather's nice, it's a great day out.
Oh, it's glorious. I remember going with my children when they were small and obviously couldn't take them into the sort of smart enclosures, but we'd just take a picnic and go down the river and try and stop falling in.
Yeah, harder than it looks when they're small. They're deceptively quick near riverbanks. I
did indeed fall in, but it's all right. We fished her out.
Well played.
So, I mean, what do you think would be? What do you think would be the ways that rowing? I mean, again, I'm kind of a very sort of data-driven individual, and I kind of look up participation figures on the Active Lives website, stuff like that. And it seems to be, there seems to be a decline. We didn't get the boost that we tend to get after the last Olympics because it was not timing. We didn't do quite as well and it all went a bit wrong. But what do you see as the things that, oh, you can fix that and you get loads more people in?
I think for me, what has been really quite revelatory, really, about joining York, having rowed at university, is the ability to do what I can, to be realistic about what I can and can't achieve. And so we have a system whereby, you know, through the week, there are all the things like, you know, ergs on this night, circuits, weights, whatever it is. And then in the winter months anyway, two sessions of rowing on a Saturday and on a Sunday, and you put your availability down and then you get put in a boat. And obviously boats then form and then it's like, oh, let's aim for this. Of course that happens naturally, but that was really attractive to me because I think at university it was very, very all or nothing, very, which is fine, fair enough, but like very like, if you're going to do this, you've got to turn up, you can't put an ATA, and you know, you had your seat and that was the boat and that was what you were building up. But I think to have the ability to go, here's some experienced rowers, and actually, and we don't really get coaching, you know, you just go, you go out and sort of coach yourselves, which is sometimes frustrating. But I think that to have that, to sort of, and I don't, you know, I don't even know how you go about doing that when you are also trying to pull together set boats to race in certain races. But I think that's a lot of the time what puts people off. They go, oh, it's such a commitment. And it is, but it's also one of the things where you become committed because you enjoy it. So when I first started again, I was thinking, oh, well, I'll just row a bit here and there. And now I'm like, oh, actually, no, I am going to sign up for Saturday and Sunday sessions because it's great and I love it and whatever. And maybe one day I'll be in a quad and one day I'll be an eight or I'll be a sub or, and then that final, go for a run with that person, whatever it is. But it's getting you out, and increasingly as the weather's going to get better, you can find someone and take a pair out or whatever it is. That's a rather waffly answer, but I think that, and I think maybe, I don't know, the Olympics does help. Obviously COVID slightly screwed the last one as well.
Yeah.
But more of the awareness of, and you need a river, you do need water.
Sometimes. Yeah.
Not everywhere has
sorry, that. Birmingham.
Or a lake or something. You know, you can't. Yeah. You need the infrastructure. And I suppose that's tricky because you need a boathouse and you need boats. And then that is costly and complicated. It's not like football where you just need some jumpers for goals and a ball. Yeah. Yeah.
It's also, you can commit to your level, because I think some people go, oh, it's I can't commit to it because it takes up so much time. It's like, well, maybe if you can only do one weekend a month because of family or work commitments or life commitments, then just sign up for that. But it's also, I can't commit to it. Well, what else will you be doing on a Saturday morning? You'll be kind of pottering around the house and working out what you were going to do or need to do or want to do. So if you just go, well, I've booked that session from 9 till 11 or whatever, or I booked this session, you know what you're doing, and then you can do everything else around it. So I think often people find excuses for why they can't rather than positive reasons for why they should.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you can be really efficient. You know, I've got some friends who regularly take out a pair and they, or a double, and they'll do it in the week before starting work, and they'll get in, they'll get on the water, they'll row for however long, and they'll get off. And on a weekend, our early session is sort of 7:45 till 10. You know, usually not on the water till maybe 8. Usually off by 9:30. Like, frankly, if you're going to go to the gym, this is about the same amount of time. You're not, if you're motivated to be efficient because everyone else has loads of things to do.
Yeah.
On. And of course, then there's also opportunity to stay and coach or do whatever else, but you can also just turn up, row, and then leave again.
Yeah, you know, if you turn up, have a chat, have a cot, you know, get turned around. Oh, well, we better get a launch out. Who's got the blades? If you turn up and just start, you know, get the blades out, I'll get the trestles, let's get going. It doesn't have to be 45 minutes before you get on the water. You can just crack on.
Do it in like 20 tops.
Yeah. One thing you mentioned there about sort of like going to the gym, I did remember from reading your article that you hadn't necessarily sort of got back on the ergo yet.
I did an erg yesterday.
Yo, marvellous. I mean, is it genuinely as scary as... So I'm very, very strange. I love rowing machines. I've tried lots of them. It's how I actually got into rowing. It was just this... It's this natural thing. It's got a number. Make the number smaller. Everybody's happy. You kind of almost spoke as though the ergo had scarred you.
I think it has. I was trying to work out why. So one of my new rowing colleagues also read that bit, and she emailed me and she said, "Do you want me to do an erg with you?" And I said, "That would be great." And we did yesterday. We went to the boathouse and we did 3 10-minute pieces, increasing the rating. And this lady's probably 10, 15 years older than me. And I mean, she's flipping amazing on the erg. So definitely something to aspire to. And it was good doing it with her. I think the psychological element comes from at university, we obviously had Tuesday was ergs or whatever it was. And it was so kind of hyped up and we were all doing them and it was that room noise. But it wasn't just where you're just collectively getting on ergs and just slowly and steadily. It was this kind of, you know, we were erging to, you know,
for times and distances and splits.
And there were people shouting, going, come on! And it was so kind of, but also it was, wasn't people shouting, come on, because you're in a race on the water and you're trying to beat that crew there. You're like, it, you know, you're trying to beat yourself. And I don't know why, particularly for the erg, because I generally respond quite well to that kind of incentive because I'm basically quite lazy. So someone shouting at me is quite good. But I don't know. I don't know what it was, the sound. I mean, the men used to kind of fall off the ergs and vomit everywhere. And so all of that stuff.
Boys being boys.
Boys being boys. And I don't, it's just something. And then I think there's another part of it where obviously normally you go to a standard gym and everyone does the erg wrong. They always use it wrong. And I find it so frustrating and annoying. I just can't be near it. And so that also sort of, yeah, I don't know. So I just kind of went in another direction. But I did think yesterday, I was like, I need to do this. I'm just going to book myself on an erg. I'm going to come down. I'm just going to put my headphones in and not even look at the numbers and just try and think about technique and kind of just do, I don't know, 20 minutes or whatever it is. Just not set myself any mad goals and just see what happens.
I think that's actually like a really healthy, I mean, the not looking at the numbers, just getting a post-it note and slapping it over the split, I think is probably, I mean, it's completely alien to me, but I think it's probably a much healthier way of approaching it and just saying, this is just me dealing with floodwater, essentially.
Yeah. Just to sort of get myself back in the, and the physical thing, you know, like it hurts bits of you that other things don't hurt. So it's also just sort of getting used to what that feels like again, frankly.
Yeah, it's also because rowing at the high performance level and which tends to filter down into the club level, tends to be the narrative is all about pain and suffering and testosterone and how much pain you can take to get your 2K score or your 5K score or your 30-minute score or whatever. But I think it should be emphasized in your article does, and I think it's why it created such a positive response, is most people don't go rowing because they like the pain bit, they're hurting themselves. Most people don't go rowing because they're masochists. I mean, Lewin is slightly different in as much as he does genuinely enjoy seeing what he can do in that regard. People row because they actually like moving a boat through water and they like what it does for them. And the erg stuff, which is important if you're picking a crew and it's a high performance crew and you're thinking of Henley or you're an Olympian and you're going to an Olympics, you know, yes, it can be important. And yes, you can use the erg and the circuits and what have you as you get older and you're just rowing for fun or for the community or because you enjoy it as part of a keep fit thing. It doesn't have to be this falling off the erg, vomiting into a bucket, you know, thing that you see in Gold Fever or, you know, on YouTube now.
I think as well, just to go briefly a little bit, possibly controversial, you know, rowing traditionally has been quite a male-dominated sport. And without wanting to make sweeping generalizations, you know, you joke, boys will be boys. Like, men tend to embrace that side of sport, which is like, pain is only a sensation. How sick make myself. And I think women don't really do that in the same way. Mm. But as you say, I think that sort of culture has filtered down. But what I like, and I think, now that I'm older and just sort of know myself more and give less of a shit, frankly, about everyone else, is, well, why am I doing this? I'm not doing it, like you say, to kind of get my split down to some insane subhuman level. I'm doing it because I want to be healthy and be outside and use my body and move a boat through the water and all that stuff. And so actually just set all that aside and, you know, again, I do Pilates on a Monday down at the boathouse, and it's brilliant because it's a whole range of us. So you've got like the younger women, the slightly older men. And, you know, in that, I'm like, oh, I feel quite good. I'm quite bendy compared to him over there who can't touch his toes. So, you know, and I think there's more. And that was only set up quite recently as a kind of like, actually, this would be really good for all of us to help strengthen our core, which we all need. And it counteracts a lot of the kind of other things that you get from sort of traditional, you know, circuit, quite sort of straining on your joints exercise. And I think to embrace that as well and go, okay, well, Pilates can be just as valuable for rowers or yoga or whatever as doing an erg or lifting really heavy weights. Because I think more broadly, like in sport and exercise, there's been a greater awareness of kind of all this kind of, you know, we're all going to be living to 100. You use your body in a different way. You've got to look after it in a different way. And actually beasting yourself is probably not in the long term going to be that great for you. So I think it sort of ties into all of that, hopefully.
Sorry, Loon.
Yeah, no, I think we're possibly going to make that the tagline for this podcast. It's like, ladies, Lucy Denyer says, give less of a shit about what men do.
Yes.
I don't know. I think I'll go and tell my daughter that.
It's what I'm already teaching my daughters.
Give less of a shit about what everyone else is doing.
Yeah. It's probably sensible. It's just like, well, what makes you feel good?
If you're rowing in an eight and you do need to row in time for someone else, so, you know.
Yeah, we've rowed with a few people, haven't we, Aaron, who's like possibly gave less of a shit about what we were doing in the boat, and they seem to be enjoying themselves.
We've said we're not going to talk about Ben in that way anymore. He doesn't like it, bless him.
Yeah, I think as well, like, I've just really appreciated, like, everyone's so nice and they're so interested. Like, why are you here? Oh, when you rowed before and like, so kind to sort of send me an email and say, come on then, let's go down and I'll get you on the erg and I'm going to, even stuff like, can you remember how this machine works? And I'm like, not really. She's like, okay, press this button, do this. Then, you know, this is, and you can do this and you can do, and like really kind of like proper basic stuff that Frank had forgotten, but not in a kind of like, oh, I can't believe I don't know how to do this way. And just kind of, there's so much kind of grace, which I love. It's brilliant.
Nice. I think that's probably a fairly good point to call it a podcast.
Great. Will you let me know when it's listenable? I'll put it on the Rowing Club Facebook page. When's the article coming out? They knew it was happening because the photographer came down when we raced. So everyone was like, when's it coming out? And I was really like, oh, I don't know. And then someone said, oh, I've read it. Can you post it? And I said, I just feel so kind of big-headed putting it on there because I've only just done it. So someone else posted it. But yeah, I'll post the podcast.
Yes, let's get it up and spread the word far and wide that rowing is a good thing to do. And if you haven't got into it, give it a try. And if you have done it in the past, get back into it. It's been absolutely lovely talking to you, Lucy, and very, very nice to meet you.
Thank you. Nice to chat.
Thank you very much indeed.
Have a lovely day. Bye for now.
Bye.